I need a quote. My name is Matthew Kroll.
And we record so other people ask. My name is Shahir Dowd.
And this is the only podcast about movies, specifically the film Civil War.
Civil War. I feel like that could have been an alternate title to this podcast. I don't know what you're doing right now. It seems strange and unnerving.
We don't need no Civil War.
Oh, yeah, Guns N' Roses. That could also be another title for this podcast. Also, the second movie...
Chinese Democracy.
The second movie that we've done on this podcast that is titled Civil War.
Captain America Civil War.
Yeah, who cares about that guy? I tell you who doesn't. Alex Garland does not care about Captain America.
No, probably not.
No. I'm excited to talk about this one. I'm going to be really upfront right now, which is this is going to be a really difficult one for me. And I'll explain why in a minute after I read out a couple of emails that we've gotten over the last few weeks.
Ooh.
It's been a little bit. Thank you to everyone who emailed us in at onlymoviepodcast@gmail.com. We've got a couple here, and I'll just read them both. Paul writes us in, "Dear Matt and Shahir, after your lovely episode, I feel validated for liking Dream Scenario as much as I did. It reminded me of The Truman Show in its thorough exploration of an absurd concept on an individual and society. But more importantly, shout out to Michael Cera as the agency manager at Thoughts, a bit of delusional new age tech bro archetype, but slightly subversive in that I found him quite likable and at least somewhat good at his job. But maybe that's just my instinctual reaction to any character who looks into the camera and declares, 'Paul, you are the most interesting man in the world.' Looking forward to the video game discussion, panel discussion, and your guys' thoughts on Monkey Man. Paul, thank you again for those emails. Paul, you can now get an episode about video game panel discussions. Paul, there is an episode that would have dropped at this time with the lovely guest Shiv Reddy on Monkey Man as well. And also, watch Dream Scenario again. Wasn't that a great movie?
It was. Actually, so when I was away 2 weeks ago, in parts unknown that I cannot speak to other than the fact that I was part of a game show called The Getaway, and it was announced in Variety. That's the only thing I can literally, that's so what I can talk
you can,
about.
You can just say it.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
I was on set and we were talking with some various people about films that we'd seen recently.
Mm-hmm.
And someone brought up Dream Scenario and how they didn't like it.
Ooh.
And then we fought.
Oh, it was a civil war.
And it was fun. And I think I might have turned some opinions. I don't know.
What was the consensus of why Civil War sucked?
Not Civil War.
I'm sorry, of why Dream Scenario sucked.
Dream Scenario, they were basically saying how it felt like just, I disagreed with this, but like, it was like, they're like, oh, well, this just feels like Nick Cage is trying to do weird stuff. And I was like, I mean.
Nick Cage has been doing weird stuff for a long time, my friend.
Anyway, it's a long thing. I think I had made a couple points. I referenced back. I offered them to go listen to the podcast. So maybe they did. And maybe they should change some hearts and minds.
You want to say, if you want to see weird, watch Jiu-Jitsu, watch Face Off.
Watch Jiu-Jitsu.
But if you want to see weird, just.
Or you watch Mandy.
Adaptation. I mean, look, Nicolas Cage, what a body of work. Stephen also writes us in, I don't know if you will do Wicked Little Leaders. I got to be honest with you, Stephen, right now, I don't know what this film is.
Yeah, what is that?
So I'm going to have to do a Google search right after this. There's probably not a lot to say, but Stephen continues, there's probably not a lot to say about it in a podcast, except it's a fun little movie, brilliantly acted and well told. They use some real letters, which somehow made the swearing seem even funnier. Just a good time, really. But sometimes that's what we need. Thanks, Stephen. Stephen, you have alerted me to a movie that I didn't know anything about, and I am currently Googling, and I'm going to look at it.
So it's Jesse Buckley and Olivia Colman. I've been seeing their press tour on Instagram, but I didn't know what they were in.
I have seen that press tour because it was hosted by Josh Horowitz.
Maybe that's why I'm seeing it, because Josh is doing the interviews. They seem like they're having a good time.
Wicked Little Leaders is a 2023 British black comedy mystery directed by Theo Sherrock. Based on a true scandal, it follows the investigation into the anonymous author of numerously crudely insulting letters sent to the residents of a seaside town of Littlehampton. Okay. I like the sound of that premise, by the way. I like the sound of like anonymous letters starting a civil war, so to speak.
Dear Sir or Madam.
Dear Sir or Madam. You suck, which is how I start. I'm surprised we have not received that email, by the way. Please,
if someone doesn't send it to onlymoviepodcast@gmail.com now, I will be
very disappointed in our listeners.
to whom it may concern.
But just the gift from Bob's Burgers as well would be appreciated. This is the second Alex Garland film that we have done on this podcast. Though, as we've described probably in that previous episode on Annihilation, Alex Garland is an important figure in both your and my life, and the intersection of our lives, which is that it his film Dread. The film that he wrote, Dread, was one of the first films you and I hung out to see together. Do you remember that? At your place, we watched, and I can't remember, did we watch it in 3D? I felt like
we did.
I felt like you were showcasing me your 3D... Your 3D projector abilities. And it, in fact, turned me on to the idea that you could install a projector at home, which I have now since done. And I think I even own your old screen now, right?
You watched the screen that we watched that on, I think.
So Alex Garland is in my house, so to speak.
Yeah, that's basically where we've gone with this.
But he's an important figure in a lot of the movies we've talked about. Like 28 Days Later is a formative film for both of us, right? Like we were of the right age when that movie came out. The Beach, Ex Machina, Annihilation, certainly, and so many others. So
I did miss Men.
Men.
No, but the film Men.
I did miss Men as well.
Yeah.
But Sunshine, have we talked about Sunshine on this podcast?
I don't believe so.
Have you seen Sunshine?
No.
It rules. It's a Danny Boyle film. Early sort of like science fiction with a real leaning towards the science of it all. So a little bit like Interstellar in that sense. Chris Evans, I believe, is in it. It rules. It's really, really good. It's got a kind of a wacky third act, which gets a little crazy, but I actually kind of appreciate it. And one of my favorite one of my favorite directors is a guy by the name of Mark Romanek, who's only directed a couple of movies and a couple of TV shows, but he's one of my favorite music video directors. He directed an Alex Garland adaptation, Never Let Me Go, which I absolutely adored. So much to the point, somehow I had become in contact with Mark Romanek and I emailed him about it afterwards, and I was very moved by that movie. So an important filmmaker for us both. But you did something very unusual, which is that you watched this right after watching Monkey Man.
I did.
How did you cope?
Not well. I came home and Jamie's asked me how the movies were, and I said, excellent. And excellent. It was 4.5 hours of brutality. it's so funny. I go to the AMC Lincoln mostly to see my films, and the only time I could see Monkey Man not closed captioned and not at like 10 p.m. at that theater was a 4 p.m. showing.
Right.
So I moved some stuff around, and by the time I got there, not only was the Ministry of Handsome Gentlemen or whatever that Henry Cavill movie that's coming out
Ritchie
soon.
Film.
Yeah, that had its premiere there because it always happens on Mondays. Yeah. Like, so I think Henry Cavill might have been there. I have no idea. I was in two different movies. I got out and I was like, wait, there's a 7:30? Okay, wait. Oh, man, there's one prime seat in the IMAX thing. Like, someone canceled their ticket, obviously. I was like, let's go. So I did see this film also in IMAX.
Oh, I can't quite imagine the experience.
It was effective.
We should talk about the sound design of actual guns in a minute. Can you tell us what Civil War is about before we dive in?
I sure can, because if I can't tell you anyway, the Internet Movie Database can, and it says Civil War is a journey across a dystopian future America following a team of military embedded journalists as they race against time to reach DC before rebel factions descend upon the White House.
Ooh,
this description, I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10 because while it doesn't give away the stuff, it also kind of leans into the way the trailers leaned. And I know you don't watch trailers, but this movie didn't tell you what it was really about in the trailers, in my opinion.
I've watched the trailer since seeing the movie. I didn't watch the trailer prior to the movie. And I've read the online discourse of the disappointment that some people had about what the film is actually about versus what the trailers sold. Now, one thing we should point out is that this is an A24 release, and this is the biggest A24 film that they've released. It's with a budget of $50 million, which for a studio like A24 is a big push.
Yes.
It was also part of a sort of internal mandate within A24 to work themselves into sort of bigger summer blockbusters outside of the auteur-driven cinema that they had previously been known for. Simultaneously, this week it was announced that Jeff Scholl's production company, Participant Media, which has been around for about 20 years now and produced films like Spotlight and An Inconvenient Truth and many others, is also announced its closure. Just as A24 is now, you know, A24 being one of the most successful smaller production company and distribution companies to come around in a while, it's interesting to note that A24 has decided to take the leap into larger commercial fare in, you know, and having an IMAX release for its for this type of movie, at the same time as a production company like Participant Media has decided to close its doors. And the reason that Participant Media has decided to close its doors is the financial toll that this is taking. Now, Jeff Scholl is, we talked about him in one of our episodes. I can't remember which one, but it was in the context of billionaires with the capacity for trying to do good. I can't recall which episode that was in. But Jeff Scholl was a former eBay investor or tech head who did very well financially, started a production company, and has a sort of mandate within Participant Films to have films not necessarily be financially successful as their main end goal, but to be socially successful as one of their main end goals. So for them, a film like An Inconvenient Truth does enormous good because it actually affected real change. They've had many other films where the films have not been financially successful, but have impacted social change in some way that they've considered that a win. So it's sort of interesting that we're in this point now where two different production companies are kind of making these pivots, one closing its doors entirely and one kind of deciding to opt in a different direction that I think will make for an interesting, maybe contextual backdrop for this film. But I did see there was an interesting thing, which is that the film sold itself as a kind of a dystopian action adventure, perhaps. But what it really is a film about photojournalism. And that is the part that I will just lay out my cards on the table here. Going to be difficult for me to talk about because for the last, I think, 8 years or so, it is a ridiculous amount of time. I have been working on a film which has got development funding from the New Zealand Film Commission about a photojournalist, about a war photographer, a female war photographer, who looks and acts and talks a lot like Kirsten Dunst in this film. There was a lot of me watching this and a lot of me watching this movie kind of in enormous fear because there was such a striking similarity, I guess, just in type. They're not the same characters, but I was like, you really could see these two films, these two ideas as influenced by one another. And then secondly, there's a scene in Civil War which starts out almost exactly like a scene in the film that I've written. And it goes in a slightly different direction, but I was like, just curling up in my seat during that scene going, oh God, please don't do the thing that I think this scene's going to do because that's what I've done. So
that's the worst feeling. As someone who makes media, I think that might be the worst feeling you can have.
Yeah.
Like it's brutal. Or the fear of it, like not even that this did exactly what you were afraid of, but that, I'm so sorry. That sucks so bad.
Look, And in no way suggesting there's any parity between what I'm working on and what Alex Garland is doing whatsoever. All that I'm saying is I have been working on a film specifically that deals with the topics that are addressed in this film by characters who look and sound very similar. And I felt I was watching it more from that lens than I was watching the film itself. So I just wanted to put that out on the table first before we get started. It's going to be an interesting conversation for me.
I was delighted. This movie, I was actually not psyched to see. I fucking hate politics now.
I hate politics.
And it's not that they're not important and it's not that we shouldn't engage in them. I just fucking hate them. And this movie was turning something or let me rephrase, was positioned and convinced me it was taking something very hot button political and turning it into an action sort of romp, like you sort of said. And so no matter what side of that die you stand on or where it falls, I was like, this is just going to, like, if this isn't done incredibly carefully, like, it's just going to cause problems. And I wasn't excited to talk about it. But the second that the movie reveals sort of what it's actually about, that being photojournalism, I felt the opposite of how you felt. I felt a sense of relief and just vibes, baby. Because like what I realized, and I haven't dug terribly deep into the discourse. I know people on both sides, being fair and balanced TM, are disappointed in the take. Because it seems, again, tertiary viewing, that the movie didn't take time to make whomever's political agenda that they thought it might go lean towards make them feel validated. And that goes across the entire political spectrum, because this movie weirdly doesn't give a shit about that element. There are things that affect the plot that you can read in different ways, etc. But they're whispers on the wind. They're a garnish. They're a piece of ancillary content that you can pull from based on your own political leanings. Because what this is concerned with is Lee, Joel, Jesse, and what was his name? The character's name. Why am I blanking? Oh, Sammy. Stephen McKinley Henderson. Their journey to try to get this scoop before the president is deposed. And man, I was so happy that that's what this movie was about.
Yeah, we should talk about what it's about, really, because I think that's at the forefront of the concerns about the movie. I agree, there's a sort of general tenor. I think there was a general tenor to when the initial marketing came out of discomfort of this film. Not dissimilar, and this is the second time in 2 weeks I'm going to mention this film, not dissimilar to when Todd Phillips' Joker came out and there was a concern that that film would incite violence in some way, which I think a reviewer had written at the time. But because Civil War depicted images that weren't that far from a real possibility in American culture as we know it today. And so for people outside of American culture, that might seem like hyperbole. But for us that have been living in here for a while, I think there is a distinct sense that the polarization of America has become such that talking to the opposition or talking to an opposite political ideology is now off the table, because there is a disagreed understanding of reality.
Right.
And look, there's no further. I watched another film this week. I watched The Truth versus Alex Jones, just a sort of straightforward documentary depicting the Sandy Hook trials. And, you know, Alex Jones is obviously a sort of main, I guess what you would call a fringe right-wing political influencer, but
a sociopath.
One that has reached a sort of strange political ascendancy off the back of completely fabricating the truth.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about like the effective polarization, while I know there's many shades of gray between an Alex Jones and from probably our positions, there's probably a million shades of gray between those two steps. There is a
God,
sense
I
that,
hope so.
Sometimes there is a sense that there is a disagreement about reality in many cases. So with that disagreement about reality, it's interesting that we get a film that is essentially about the way in which we capture reality and the way in which we capture images of a conflict as it goes on. And again, this is a subject that I'm really interested in, not so much that I've also written a film about it in this and hoping to make that at some point soon. I'm interested in the ethics of The Capturing of War. And Thomas Flight, who's a great video essayist, who's part of Nebula as well, by the way, wrote an article this week about a misunderstanding of Civil War, or Alex Garland's misunderstanding of Civil War. And he uses this book, which I'm holding up in front of me right now, Susan Sontag's book, Regarding the Pain of Others. And this is a really key text that I've been using for the last couple of years and thinking about, alongside another book called The Bang Bang Club, about the ethics of photography and what happens when a photojournalist goes in. Because I think what Sontag is kind of getting towards, and what I'm really interested in, and what I think a lot of films that have dealt with photojournalism before, the film I kind of think about a lot also is Oliver Stone's film Salvador, is the idea that a photojournalist isn't capturing reality. And it's a hard concept for us to kind of get our heads around, but a photojournalist is as much excluding things out of the frame as they are including things in the frame. And that process creates a sustained reality. And there's no mincing words here. You know, war photography is used as a propagandistic element as well in the way wars are fought. So I was really curious what Garland had to say about the ethics of war journalism. Because that's an area I'm interested in. Lee's character, played by Kristen Dunst, I think played really beautifully, by the way, you know, has that sort of seasoned approach to war photography. She knows and understands the terrain. She's done this before. And she, you know, comes in with the quote that I started with at the beginning of this film, which is that we don't ask the questions, we record so other people ask. And in fact, when I've been looking at war photography or thinking about war photography, I actually don't think that that is quite the case. I think there is a sort of a much more nuanced approach to political objectivity of war photography than this film kind of gives way to. And I was really interested to understand the dynamics of what images these characters were taking and what they left out of the frame. And I don't know if by the end of the movie, there was much of a disparity between the eyes of the journalist and the photographs that they took. Like, it pretty much was, this is what they saw, this is what they took. And I think there's more to this story. There's more to the process of photography, for one, and more to the process of how you depict a war than this film offers. And I kind of left the movie wondering about, I'm very happy that it's a film about journalism. I'm very happy that it's a movie that touches on these topics that I'm really interested in. I did wonder what its position was on those ethical concerns. And I don't know if it really had one. Or
I mean, I think it did.
What was it?
I think, and again, this might be a subjective take on what I saw, but based on the fact that every character, really every character, possibly outside of Sammy, was very tropey in various elements of how they were presented and how they relate to whatever their journalistic vocation was. So Lee, played by Kirsten Dunst, and Jesse, played by Callie Spanny. Jesse is the young one who looks up to Lee, wants to be a war photographer as well. Lee is sort of the hardened one that for good or ill, does believe that this character seems to believe that what they are doing is objective. I don't think the movie displays what she does as objective, but I think this character believes that she is, that her work is objective. Then you have Joel. Joel is a character who's, I guess, sort of the writer side of things.
Producer.
You can tell he vibes with the lifestyle more than the content, if that makes sense. Like, people that are addicted to how the thing is made as opposed to what it is doing and cares more about that. Then you have the other journalists, Tony and Bohai, played by Evan Lai and Nelson Lee, pardon. And they're like kind of these like almost like party animal versions of reporters that are so like just like in it for the fucking ride, man. And finally, you have Sammy, played by Stephen McKinley Henderson, who is sort of the elder statesman of the group, who might have felt one way or the other, but is kind of resigned to like still like he should retire, but he's still doing it because this is what he does. And it's like this, like it's almost that sort of, I think one thing weirdly that this movie doesn't overtly say, but makes very clear about its stance on this particular job, is that it's something that is, for better or many times worse, actually probably for worse, highly addictive. Or the people that are engaging in this activity in this movie have addictive tendencies. Even Lee's tendency of like being like drawing the line and not getting involved, etc., until obviously spoilers at the end, she does. Like I think this movie's stance on war journalism is more negative than positive, and I think it starts to center more on like almost calling out all of these different aspects of the vocation as voyeurs, like as opposed to people actually affecting change. The closest we get, weirdly, in this movie is Lee's quote. It's in the trailer. She's like, I've been to so many war zones, and I take pictures because I thought it was a warning to send back home. Don't do this. But none of that is effective. Like in this movie specifically, if that was her goal, she was ineffective. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so I don't know. I feel like I might be getting to the end of my point and going in a circle, but I don't think this movie likes war journalism or likes the act that many of these characters do. I didn't get the read that it thought of them fondly. Everyone they run into, sorry, now I have one more point. Mm-hmm. Everyone that they run into either fully ignores them or does not like them, and everything that they set out to do is tainted by either flaws in their own character or the limitations of their own ethos. Anyway, that's my take. What did you think, Shahir, after I rambled for 8 minutes?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure that the film takes an ethical stance on what it is they do, because I don't to your point, there is one scene which I really did like which explored the distinction between the horrors they were witnessing and the sort of excitement of what they were witnessing. Mm-hmm. And that was the sort of first raid, the sort of bang bang that they talk about when they go in the morning. And it's a great needle drop there by De La Soul in the middle of that as well. Jesse photographs a sort of execution during that sequence and another raid. But while I can see that there's a certain excitement to what they do, because it's certainly powerful. And you and I have been in this situation. It's powerful to be in the position of having to record something exciting. Sure. And there's always this thing that I try to remind myself of in those situations. You know, we've done it with celebrities. We've done it in, in our news context as well, is that we are not part of the story, despite the fact that our role in the story is important. And there's something interesting in this film, which is that Lee and Jesse become documenters of an ongoing civil war, and ultimately the film is leading towards its final image. And the final image is the Western frontier. What do they call the
Western forces?
The Western forces, which is California and Texas. Again, not a sort of reality that we would understand as far as political alignments right now. But where they, and a spoiler, major spoiler here, but where they assassinate execute the president of the United States, played by Nick Offerman. And then Jesse captures that final image as it occurs. And I think there's an interesting idea there, which is that Jesse, has naively come into this imagining herself as a documenter, as like an objective documenter, but she is actually, by that final image, part of the machine that is there to capture that image to cement the end of the war. I think that's an interesting idea, but it's not one that I'm convinced that the movie conclusively gets towards. And
I don't think they call it the machinery, but I don't think the movie particularly likes photojournalists.
I'm not sure where you're getting the idea that it doesn't like photojournalists. I'm not sure.
Because it portrays them as flawed individuals that are out for various elements outside of or that vocation can provide them. Never get to see like them feeling good about work that they've done or talk about positive change. The only time we ever talk about any sort of effect of their work is either Jesse saying, "Oh my God, Lee, I love your stuff. I want to be just like you," or how none of the warnings from any of the war photography did anything.
Well, I don't think what we, it's an interesting couple of things here. One is that I don't think we get to see their work going out in the field, but they do come across some embedded photographers as well, which I think is an interesting display from both of them. But there is a scene where Lee and Jesse are sitting on a sort of not railings. What do they call the bleachers? And yep. She's developing photographs, and Lee acknowledges, "This is a really great photograph that you've taken. It's a really powerful image." And Jesse acknowledges that as well. So I think I don't see it as like a film that dislikes the thing. Second thing I just want to point out there is that I say this because I have written this, which is that this is a film that depicts a current day modern photojournalist using analog film to photograph a war.
Right.
And I, you know, there's a part of me that goes, I love that idea. It's beautiful. I have a character that does that in my film, but it's sort of like, you know, we explain it to quite some detail. It is sort of very difficult to imagine that being a practical reality today in any way, shape, or form. And as I saw it, I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. Not that the film is wrong in this, but it's just like, there was a real dissonance between like, yeah, that's a beautiful idea that this person takes analog photography. But at the same time, I was like, there's just a dissonance of like, I don't think that's a really practical approach. That's like someone shooting a celebrity red carpet on film and having to go back and develop the negative.
Right.
We just know that that's not a reality that is happening today.
It's funny. I think this is where I think there's a disparity. I think this movie loves the act of photography. Mm-hmm. I don't think it loves photographers or war photographers specifically, because even in that bleacher scene, you're right. She says, "Oh, wow, that's a great photo." Mm. But it's all that's doing is saying that these characters like they can identify a visually pleasing image. It's not saying, it's not bringing up that like what Jesse is doing has any value or is important outside of its aesthetics.
And that's where I come down on the film. What is the film's take at this point? Because I think what would be interesting, and again, I apologize in advance, this is not a thing we should do, which is like try to describe what the film should be versus what it is and what it isn't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whatever. But I think there's an interesting point there for the film to have a conversation about the way in which that image became captured and what that image is telling, what story that image is telling. And the film really just kind of reveals that image. And I think part of this is that the film...
Which image? I'm so sorry. The one that... The end?
No. The photograph that Jesse took during the first...
Took during the thing. Yep.
Yeah. We see how... We see the process by which that image came to be. We see that image as it was taken. And then we see that image as it's being developed and turned into an image as it's seen. And again, another key reference point for me that I've used in this is Ansel Adams wrote a series of three books called The Camera, The Print, The Negative. And they are... These are three of the most incredible books I've ever read. They are technical documents. All of these are technical documents on how to create a photograph. And it basically is saying, if you want to create a photograph, you need to have a visualization of what that photograph is going to look like and how it's going to make you feel. And in order to get to that point, you need to understand the inner workings of these three elements. And then there's a book for each of those elements, the camera, the print, and the negative.
You could just listen to Chad Kroeger.
Yeah, look at this photograph. I love the look at this graph meme, by the way, which my which is a meme that mathematician friends of mine like throw around all the time whenever they want to prove me wrong about anything. They're like, look at this graph. I love that series of books, but and I think this film kind of does that sort of similar thing, which is understanding the photograph, the camera. You know, Jesse and Lee walk outside and they see that helicopter, and she mentions the fact, oh, you don't see many cameras like that out in the field today. The negative, which is the image that, you know, like the actual camera negative, and the print, which is what she makes at the end. So it's like seeing that journey of going. But I don't know if I get a clear understanding from the film of what Jesse thinks about that image that she's taken. And, it, you know, like it might be a beautiful image that she's taken, but I don't know if the film has a position on what she thinks about it.
And that is why I don't think the movie thinks kindly of photojournalists. Because if they did, in my opinion, if they did, they would go into that more about the personalness of it and how that, like, what it means. And like, because otherwise there's no real external forces about any of the work that they're doing in this movie. Like, yeah, that's the one moment and they don't explore it.
So
like,
and
to me, that omission says, oh, well, like they're more concerned about like this practice that they're all in for different reasons might be more bad than good. That's the, again, vibe I got.
Yeah, I'm not sure I read that into it as so much as I read that I don't think that the film takes a position on what the, on both the power of the images that they're making and what story those images are telling, and whether there's a distinction between the story that those images are telling versus the story that we're seeing as an audience.
But much like your thing about like, there's just, it's just as much about what's outside of the frame as inside of the frame. The lack of that in this movie, I think, reveals the point they're trying to make.
What's weird about that is that essentially, the entire writing and history of war photography and war journalism is all about the ethical side of what it takes to create an image. The book that I've mentioned, you know, Susan Sontag, is all about the power of what is outside of the image and what it does to the imagination.
Sure.
Versus what's inside the image. You know, like this book, Regarding the Pain of Others, is about Virginia Woolf wrote an article about the images that were coming out about the Spanish War, mm-hmm, and how do we dissect and understand these images in Susan Sontag,
that was
the Spanish Civil War, I think.
Civil War.
Yeah. And so the entire history of photojournalism is written around the ethics of what is being taken and both the veracity of what is being taken and how it gets used in some way. So for a film to kind of come out and like not have anything to say about that, when that is the entire body of work of what photojournalism is about, kind of strikes me as like a strange position. At least my reading of it is that I didn't find that there was a compelling argument or conversation or discussion being made about photojournalism when it is a film about photojournalists. And we've also identified one other thing, which is that the film politically is somewhat divorced from a reality that we understand right now, but not too far away, but doesn't really take a position or explore what is the nature of the war that is going on, right? Like, we don't really know and understand it. A film that came to mind that as I was watching this was Alfonso Cuarón's Children of Men, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a film that takes place in a war zone. And we understand what that war is and why it's happening and what it's about. In this film, we're sort of like, what is this war? I know it's a war and I know it's terrible. I'm not exactly sure what's going on or why, what it is. But
yeah, I mean, I think those omissions are what specifically drove me to my idea of what they're trying to say, because you are right. Like, the normally war photography, and especially, it's funny because in our current increased political landscape, everything that once might have had some moral or ethical guidelines seems to be fading. And I think, especially with the addition of various either photo doctoring tools, people have done it forever, but now it's just become easier than ever. or things along those lines, or the 24-hour news cycle, or you could look at all of the ways that we as modern day Americans engage with media.
Yeah.
The honor or the ethics of traditional war photography or war journalism is something that is in incredible short supply. And I think this movie is sort of taking those two ideas and like smashing them together, because it doesn't show that side that you talk about through the books and through how this topic has been discussed ad nauseum incorrectly and well in many other places, because it's not interested in that, because I think what it's trying to say, whether it does it effectively or not, that's a different story. But I think the way it presents its characters and their vocation is saying, look at all these people who are doing this thing that they believe is important for a multitude of different personal or professional or ideological reasons. And look how it's just not helping. And all it's doing is making more of those people. Like, there's, and I don't know if I fully agree with that take, but that's the, like, from a moral or ethical standpoint outside of the film. But I do think that that's the vibe, and that's what I thought the film was trying to tell me through much of the omission of many of the points that you brought up that the film doesn't make.
I think the thing is, I actually, you know, and just to circle it around a little bit here, I like the vibes in the movie. I really like the vibes.
Needle drops are pretty hot too.
Needle drops are fucking great. There's a needle drop of a suicide song at the beginning of this, yep, which I've listened to like 10 times today. I was like, as I've been driving around, I was like, this rules. And there's a De La Soul.
When I left the theater, I was like, is it weird if I put on the Spotify playlist to Civil War?
I did the same thing. And I was like, this is, and you know, okay, so let's step back from my ethical photojournalism concerns. And I want to talk about some photographers again. And I'm saying this because I'm steeped in this research.
Right.
But I want to talk about some specific photographers. But the execution here is just chef's kiss. Our guest last week, Shiv, mentioned that the lens choices in this are really astute in that they're closer to war journalism, a contemporary war journalism that we have today. And the film is shot in a 1:8:5 aspect ratio, which is again closer to what a videographer going through war zones would film today. And I think it's got that entire aesthetic to it. The sort of prevailing thought was, I was thinking about Apocalypse Now in the way that music is used in there to create a kind of mania. And there is a sort of like mania about the war that is going on, which is that there is a madness to the war that is like beyond rational thinking. Like, and what Francis Ford Coppola got to with Apocalypse Now was that war is madness, you know, like war is napalm. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. And it is like Colonel Kurtz, you know, taking over a village, and it is madness. And Dennis Hopper, who plays a photojournalist in that film, has kind of completely succumbed to the madness in that movie. And the way that the needle drops are used in this movie, that suicide track, the De La Soul track, like these were all sort of disparate, disparate, you know, like really unusually picked needle drops.
Yeah.
But they all kind of grew into the sort of sense of like strange mania where there was a confluence of like weird influences that were pulling at this war. Like at the one hand, it was like punk experimental rock. At the other hand, it felt like country western music. In the middle of it, hip hop. And they were all this like, it was all sort of contributing to the sort of overall sense of mania to what was going on. That I did dig that vibe. Like I liked the sort of like sense that there was a madness to this.
It's funny. In no other character do I think that's sort of exemplified in this movie than Joel. Like, Joel is the one that's like fucking in it for the vibes, man. Like, and listen, that's kind of how, you know, people in either vocations like this, that you might not think about it, but like you do eventually get to that point, because after a while, you know, if you don't like what you're doing, Like, what are you doing?
I think what Joel, and by the way, it just feels like a complete coincidence that this movie kind of has a Last of Us vibe, and Last of Us has come out, and Joel from Last of Us kind of like, they feel very similar in character types as well, or they feel very, maybe in aesthetic types as well. I think what he's attracted to is the exhilaration of witnessing something and like being embedded with a soldier troop. So I think there's a credible scene later on where like a tank is rolling down Washington, D.C. and, you know, Cassie or Jesse is just kind of grabbed by one of the soldiers and like put into the line in order to take photographs. And she is part of the the photographers really like, the soldiers really understand that there is a value feature to these, you know, journalists, even though they are part, they shouldn't be there. Like they shouldn't be in the way. It's a real like liability to have them there, but they understand. And I think in our modern media age, we all very completely understand that the documentation of the war is really important.
The optics are the mission.
Yeah. It's important to get that image. Like, you know, the image of bin Laden, the image of Saddam Hussein cowering in the hole which he was found on during the Iraq War is the culmination of what the millions of dollars and the expenditure of Iraqi and American lives was to get that image. And that, you know, like there's a clear understanding in our media landscape that that image really matters. And then, as you've kind of alluded to as well, the sort of purity of that image comes under a lot of scrutiny right now. Just a few weeks ago, Kate Middleton came under enormous scrutiny
because of a photograph
that she put out, and that was published by Getty Images, I think it was, or something like that, that proved to be doctored, which became a national controversy because these images cannot be displayed in that way. A photographer that I'm really interested in is a guy by the name of Steve McCurry, one of his famous photographs, you would have seen it on the cover of National Geographic, was of a young Afghani girl with incredible hazel eyes.
Yep.
Steve McCurry, who's one of the world's most renowned photographers, was accused of both staging photographs in his career, and it was a major deal to have him talk about it. And then he was also alluded to the fact that he used Photoshop in some of his works, and there was an entire discussion about like what is the ethics of when you manipulate a photo like that. There is some controversy around that particular that Afghani girl photo, in so much as that whether she wanted to be photographed and what it meant in her culture to be photographed. I am a hobbyist photographer myself, and I've traveled to small regions in India, and I've walked around villages by myself for days on end with a camera and just asking people to photograph. And it's really fascinating. You put yourself in sort of somewhat precarious situations, but the camera is your defense mechanism. And
there's an example in this film of that.
Yeah. Which example?
So when they stop for gas and Jesse goes over to see the two men strung up.
And she asks to take the photo.
And Kirsten Dunst's Lee asks to take the photo to de-escalate the situation because she sees it's going in a direction and she knows she can play to this man's weird sense of vanity and says, I want to take your picture. And he instantly goes from being a threat to, oh, well, where should I stand?
Yeah.
And the power dynamic shifts. And there's something very interesting about that. That scene, weirdly, was one of the most effective and like it reminded me of a thing I think the movie is trying to say is that, you know, there is in these situations, there is a power dynamic because in a way, to your point, like you bring up the Saddam Hussein photo, like the media is the point. Like you need that, and so these people who capture these images have incredible power based on what they show and what they don't show,
and how they can
get around and navigate that.
I don't have it in front of me, but there's another Susan Sontag book called On Photography, where I believe from memory she makes the parallel that the language of photography is akin to the language of warfare, which is this, like, we talk about photography as shooting. We talk about, like, our lenses as barrels. You know, she talks about the idea that the there's a similarity in the language between photography and warfare. And in a way, we can use that language similarity to understand the power dynamics at play.
Did you get the shot?
Yeah. In a way, the bullet that goes through the president's body is the second bullet is the photograph. You know, right. it is the capturing of the light in that, and that is the dynamic of the photography that's going into play here. And I, again, so to sort of conclude where I'm at with this movie is that I like the vibes. I love the execution. I talked about this in our Monkey Man episode as well, but like some of the needle drops just felt like punk rock to me. And I was like, there's a real like fuck yeah quality to it, which I really, really loved. There's the staging of the final sequence, the sort of the raid on the White House is excruciating. And we should talk about the sound design there. There's a very specific thing they did, which is that they didn't do any sweetening to the sound. That is the sound of gunfire. Yep. And I think the point there is that movies tend to sweeten the sound of gunfire to make it not so offensive. And in fact, there's a thing, and this is part of that ethical conversation as well, is that movies make gunfire seem appealing when it comes from a hero and then deafening when it comes from a villain. You know, like that is a part of the sort of emotional manipulation that goes into play. And sure. It's a really smart choice in this movie to make it unappealing. Now, you saw this movie in IMAX. I saw it in RPX. I was like, I don't think I would enjoy, like, I don't think I would enjoy it. And I don't think that's the, and I think that's the point.
Yeah, it was brutal. And that was the point. I've been around a lot of guns.
Yeah.
Gunfire growing up at ranges and things like that. Yeah. And my least favorite memories of them is when people decide to shoot the larger weapons because you're just not ready. And perhaps your ear protection isn't in or any of that stuff. And this just kind of brought me back to that. Yeah. In a sense where it's just like, man, this sound sucks. Like, again, we were talking about Monkey Man or John Wick or any of those things. Like, the audio design to make guns sound cool.
Oh, yeah. The sound of a silencer in movies is meant to be sexy, right?
You know? Yeah.
The sound of James Bond's PP7.
Yeah.
If we talk about the film, the game.
Goldeneye.
Yeah. They talk really specifically about, like, the way they use sound design to indicate power in that game. And it's like, the PP7 is sexy. You know, the machine gun is strong.
But guns hurt to listen to.
Guns suck, man.
and the sound design in the IMAX theater was on point.
Yeah.
And it was an uncomfortable watch. And again, this was a double feature with Monkey Man going in, I think, to hour four of just like,
brutal violence.
Brutal violence.
Yeah. The kind of desecration of the human body in some way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just it was a lot.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you know, I'm saying how much I didn't enjoy that. It was an excellent choice.
I really, Alex Garland in, I think, four feature films, I've only seen three of them, has demonstrated, and the four films are across different genres, but he's just developed kind of an almost chameleon adaptation to each genre, you know, like science fiction with Annihilation, Ex Machina, which is also science fiction, but kind of more of a, you know, an ethics conversation around science fiction. I haven't seen Men, which is a horror movie, and Annihilation, we talked about that, and now Civil War, which is being a war movie. I think he's demonstrating a kind of chameleon-like quality, which I really like about his filmmaking.
I didn't enjoy the experience of that scene in IMAX, but I appreciated it.
Yeah. It's very effective. I think all of that is great, and I don't. I think there's, you know, part of me thinks it's actually smart to make the war feel nondescript because part of the power of the film is suggesting that these are people that would be in war zones in foreign countries, and in those countries we wouldn't understand the war.
Yep.
And in this country we also don't understand the war, and I think there's something sort of to that idea that I kind of like. However, then the film ostensibly circles around photojournalists and photojournalists who sacrificed themselves. There's a moment, this is a classic movie moment, but there's a moment where Jesse Plemons' character is kind of threatening the troop and has killed one of them. And the sort of escalation happens to the extent that he doesn't hear a car like pummeling down the road. And, that's the sort of like movie thing, which is that anything off screen cannot be heard or seen until it is on screen.
Yep.
But I like the idea of
McKinley Henderson.
Yeah, who's great in Dune as well. Stephen McKinley, being a hero for a moment. But I think around all of that, there is a sort of trauma understanding that is happening around the character of Lee. And I'm not sure that ultimately the film kind of becomes a transference between, or a sort of a mentor versus mentee.
A literal transference.
Yeah.
Like it's pretty on the nose.
Between Lee and Jesse. But I don't know what the film is saying about that transfer. And
I think it's saying this calling, be it good or ill, is generational. Like people are still going to do it and learn lessons from it, be they good or bad. They're just going to keep going. I'm still trying to dissect what Lee's air quote sacrifice
meant.
Yeah. Because, and again, maybe this was the way it was filmed and edited, but it was a real Clark Kent's dad moment for me.
Yeah, it's a moment that doesn't need to happen.
It's a moment that there's a thousand different ways, or a thousand, at least the way it is presented, to save Jesse without taking a bullet. Mm. And I just, like, it almost felt like the movie, movies do this sometimes, and it irks me every time. Mm. The movie knew that the end was almost there.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, we got to wrap this up.
I mean, there's something interesting to the idea that right before that, Lee's almost, Lee's the most experienced person here. And as they're approaching the White House, she's almost catatonic.
Yeah.
You know, she can't take photos. But then something when she sees the cars that are leaving the White House and she understands what's happening in the power play here, that the president is not in those cars, that this is a decoy, that she's going to go in, something takes over. I found it's a neat story on paper. And it's the right story on paper, but I'm not sure exactly where we get to by the end of it. And
something with the presentation is off.
Yeah. And I kind of felt like I like where we are. I like this world. I like how you've constructed this world. I'm not sure. If the point is the quote that I said at the beginning, which is that we record so other people ask, I'm half in the bag with that idea. I'm not sure. And maybe the other side of this is A24's big step into like blockbuster summer filmmaking.
Right.
I was like, I don't know. You know, this feels like an auteur driven piece. And I don't know if the masses that you are aiming for in this kind of release are going to get that nuance, because I, as a quote unquote, well-viewed human being, still find it muddy. You know, like I'm not sure that that's where we're going to get to.
I have a theory. Mm-hmm. I think, let's both put on our monocles for this one. But I think as people who watch a lot of media, the cheap seat swing that this movie decides to do at the end doesn't work. But I bet you it was included for that very reason of sort of a very easily digestible and understandable sort of character ending arc, because I don't see how a movie like that does take a decent amount of care throughout its world building would take a swing like that unless they were really going for some four quadrant bullshit. Like, well, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I also, I'm second guessing my opinion here. And I'm second guessing my opinion because of my first time viewing of Children of Men, which is a movie that gets to its end point. And I, at the end of that movie, I was kind of like, that was a beautiful, incredible journey. I'm not sure where we got to at the end of that movie. And it's only that I've watched it, several times since then.
Maybe this one needs a couple more.
This one needs a couple more viewings before I really fully digest where the film got. But in the first viewing, for me, I'm left with a kind of question mark about where the film kind of gets to. And, you know, again, if the fact that I am just very in this world and thinking about this world and reading a lot and looking at a lot of work kind of taints that opinion, that's totally fine. I would love to hear more opinions. Write us in at onlymoviepodcast@gmail.com. I'm also glad that a movie can be divisive. I'm also glad that a movie doesn't have an easy answer. I'm also glad that a movie can be a $50 million movie and raise questions. You know, like if 2001 A Space Odyssey answered every question on the first viewing, then we wouldn't have much to chew on. But if maybe
then we wouldn't have Barbie.
Yeah, then we wouldn't have Barbenheimer. Yeah,
I really like that this movie went a direction that its marketing didn't lead me to. Yeah. I understand people being a little bit pissed off about that, but at the same time, it's like, get over it. Like, there's something interesting here to be gleaned.
Yeah,
and if they made it clear this was about war journalists from the get-go,
yeah,
you wouldn't have gone to see it. Like, like the royal you, yeah, right?
It's a hard sell, I think, to get people in theaters and, to, you know, a film about just, war journalism.
Yeah, and it's smart because, like, in this hyper-politicalized climate, you're gonna, if you do that even keel, like, oh, an American Civil War, like in the trailers, yeah, everyone's gonna go see, like, you're gonna get everyone. And they did, at least for the first weekend. I'll be curious what this film's sort of like longer tail is, like in its theatrical run.
Yeah.
Because that's gonna be the telling point. But I mean, even all of the advertising is calling it like the movie event of the year. Like, they're really going for like the blockbustery crowd, which I don't think this movie's vibe really hits.
Yeah. And maybe they're also going for the divisiveness, the culture, you know, the polarized culture that we live in today, which would be like, oh, you know, what leftist propaganda is this, or what right wing media? And the film like really doesn't allow or offer a position either way for either group to latch onto. We don't really get a clear understanding of what the war is about.
And it's interesting. It's marketing, like it's images. Mm. Civil War, the American, the main image, it's the Statue of Liberty with snipers in it, which has no bearing or does not exist in the movie. But the image itself is so evocative that like, you're like, oh shit. And it actually gets the vibe across of what they're trying to sell, even though they kind of do a little bait and switch for the point. Yeah. Where like, I'm not even mad at it. Like, I don't know. I just am like, you did it. You got me there.
Yeah, but I'll admit, I think some of the scenes at the beginning are really well, except the first scene in New York City, in Brooklyn, I think it's happening. It made me think about, you know, that comic book series DMZ?
Yeah.
The Demilitarized Zone, about Manhattan being split up into zones. And it kind of made me think about like the early breakdown of that, you know, of that story as well.
Me think about the inevitable water wars.
Yes, the inevitable water wars. And like, it just, it doesn't seem far-fetched that we would end up in a situation like this and wouldn't understand why it would happen. So, you know, I think maybe to summarize it, is this finger has its movie on a lot of interesting buttons.
This movie has its finger.
In a lot of interesting places. In a lot of interesting places. And it will tighten your sphincter.
I mean, well, the gunshots in IMAX, I suppose.
Yeah. And I think I like it for that fact. I think that for me, it felt like there was more opportunity to delve into what the main ethical concern is of the world that he is operating within. You know, much like medical shows get into the ethical concerns of doctors, you know, like we kind of see what that is. I'm not sure that this film kind of gets there for me in first viewing, but I'm really curious to see if it does eventually. Interesting film. Like, you know, Monkey Man and this are two films which I actually do quite like. And I do recommend. They're not home runs for me by any stretch of the imagination, but they're both interesting movies with a lot on their mind and take really ambitious swings in directions that I think are worth paying money to.
Yeah, no, I 1,000% agree. Again, I really liked the swing that this movie took and the sort of misdirect. I think my, you know what I like about this movie is I'm very confident on my read. Yeah. However, it is not something that like, I want to entirely say that either your read, Shahir, or anyone else listening's like, the way this thing is constructed, every read is a valid read. Right. Like it's so sparse on purpose in various ways that you can glean a lot out of it in different from different elements. So I don't know. I found it very interesting. And I do think it is worth your time. I don't know if I'd see it in IMAX. I just saw it because it was the one showing.
Yeah.
It's not like the visual spectacle of it is really going to pull. I mean, it's a pretty movie. Yeah. But I you know, I don't think you need to do it. But anyway, hey, you know what? We don't need no civil war.
We don't need no. I don't know the rest of the words of that song. I do like Guns N' Roses.
I can only I only know like the sound of it. It's like, yeah. We don't need no civil war, but I'm gonna get a human ground restored. Like, I'm not saying words there. I'm just saying what the song sounds like.
No, that's Axl Rose's diction. I think that sounds exactly like him.
Oh, no, no, no. Wow, wow. Anyway, this has been the only podcast about the film Civil War. Shahir, when you are not lining up with five of your closest friends and enemies in a German airport and running directly at each other, where can folks find you?
You can find me growing into giant man at my website, www.shahirdaud.com. That's S-H-A-H-I-R-D-A-U-D.com. Or my company website, suvanova.com. That's S-U-V-A-N-O-V-A. Matt, when you are enlisting Ant-Man for your side of the battle, where can people find you?
You can find me slipping that tape of Tony Stark's dad getting axed by the Winter Soldier over Iron Man himself. Over at my website, mattheguerol.com, my life and works. Also, Skeletor, the number 4, Pierre Easy on Instagram and PSN. And of course, Emperor MSK on Twitter and Matthew Cole at Blue Sky. And over on Extra Credits and Extra History, I believe by now we will have our fourth episode of our Secret Society series, which is on the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which is Aleister Crowley.
Mr. Crowley.
A lot of Brock we're doing today. So it's very excited to do that. Please check that out over there. Next week, they'll be, you know what? I'm going to go on a limb here.
There'll be a movie.
I'm going to say we're going to watch a movie.
I would love to do The Taste of Things. I heard The First Omen is really great. But a few things to check out. We're actually recording this a couple of weeks early. So maybe the media landscape, maybe the US landscape has changed entirely, and that getting to see a movie is a war field unto itself. But love is a battlefield.
Love is a battlefield. Wow, we're going places.
Do you remember when we used to be able to put songs on the end of the episode? Like we used to.
I remember when we illegally put music tracks on it,
and then we had to replace all of that.
Yeah,
but this would be one of those great episodes where we like went out with one of the songs that we were talking about.
Yeah,
it would have been a good one.
Would have been great, but instead you're going to listen to our banger of a theme song. All right, everybody. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.